out the door, and it was Bobby and he was there again. He goes, just think of it, Ray. I says, what's that, Bobby? He says, see if you win the Scottish Cup today. Oh, I says, I hope I do. He says, well, that'll be 9 Scottish Cup winners' medals in the one street. No many streets in Scotland can bum about that, son.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the CSI Football Podcast, where we embark on a forensic delve into a particular season of football, usually with a tartan tint. I'm your host, Ian Stephen, and for today's episode, the Scottish Cup beckons, meeting the man who lifted the trophy, becoming an East Ayrshire legend in the process. It's Ray Montgomery. Ray, how is life as a legend of Kilmarnock treating you?
Yes. I don't know about the term legends correct. It's a term I don't particularly like anybody getting branded with, you know, but life is very good here.
Well, I called you an East Ayrshire legend. There may be debate in West Ayrshire if you're a legend or not, but are you Ayrshire born and bred and brought up?
Ayrshire born and bred, yeah. North Ayrshire, just in Saltcoats, you know, that's where I'm from. That's the town I come from. I still live there to this day. You know, I was brought up there and brought up Saltcoats Victoria in the juniors. You know, my father and uncle and that, the whole family was steeped in junior football. We're on the committee there, and from a very early age, that was the games I went to see, was the local junior club, Saltcoats Victoria. So it was. So yes, that's my local boy.
I think you might be the first person that doesn't have some form of Old Firm leaning that I've spoken to.
Yeah, you know, it's in Scottish football, you've been doing a lot of interviews and all that in your career, and I think everybody, honestly, what team do you support? What team do you really support? You know, everybody expects everybody to have allegiance to the Old Firm. I think that's just that. I think just west of Scotland mentality, I think I could be right and say, I don't think it's prevalent in the east side of the country or up north where you are from yourself. You know, I don't think it's there, but certainly in the West Coast, and I think it's a lot of baloney, you know. It's just a thing. It was here and when I started off playing, it's still here and it's still prevalent to today, and I think it's quite sad. I think it'd be a lot better if people supported the teams in their community.
We were chatting before, and you're very humble about your kind of status in the mindset of the Kilmarnock fans, and it could well be that you're so revered because you are Ayrshire, you've got links to the juniors, you weren't seen as somebody using clubs in Scotland as a stepping stone to move into the Old Firm, so it could be part of the reason why you're so well thought of.
I don't know about that, I don't know well thought of, but no, it's, you know, I think any club that I've signed for, and I've played for, and I've given them 100%, you know, and I've took a big part of that club, you know, and I've still got good relationships with the clubs that I've previously played with, you know, and no, it's good, you know, it's nice to be. If I'm thought of the way you tell me, I'm happy with that, you know.
Well, let's talk about some of the clubs, because the first club that you signed for as a youth in your kind of professional career is one of the biggest clubs in England, effectively.
Yeah. I was a youngster, just left school, you know, and was playing for a local junior team, Saltcoats Victoria, and was scouted in those days by Newcastle United, and I went to Newcastle, signed for them 18, 2-year full-time contract, and when you think back to it, that's one hell of a jump going from the West Coast juniors to Newcastle United, one of the biggest teams in the country. You know, I think as a lad, it was always football with me, and I probably didn't realise the enormity of the step, you know. Just a youngster away from home, you're saying you go away from home, your father's been running a family business for about 20 years, something, you're just out of school and he's a successful family business at the time. You're signing for a club, and in those days, you're getting sign-on fees, and you're getting on a wage that your father's been working all his life, and you're getting a better wage than him as 18-year-old, and you're saying, what is this all about? And that becomes the norm for you. You go down there, they put you up in digs, they give you a passport. Had you been abroad, they give you a passport, they open up bank accounts for you. Everything's done for you. They've got a training centre there at the time. you know, absolutely everything done for you. You think that's the norm. The only thing about that move is probably didn't realise how fortunate I was to get it, or how big it was at the time. You know, and first time away from home, you become homesick, wanting to get back up the road with your pals and them, you know. So I've got regrets about the move that it didn't work out the way I'd planned it. I think it was probably too big a move for me. At the time, too many things happened at that time.
And you had a kind of Scottish contingent down there with you, John Brownlee, John Connolly, Mark McGee.
Yeah, you know, John Brownlee, John Connolly, you know, Mark could be there slightly before me, but John Brownlee and John Connolly, yeah, guys who have, over the last few years, I've came across coming to Rugby Park and sort of got quite friendly with these guys, you know, and it's ironic how you're playing down there. Just a youngster, you're playing down there and not really setting the heather alight. And then you come up here, then you come across these guys who were seasoned professionals at the time at Newcastle. And how at that time, when I was just a youngster, you sort of looked up at them and said, oh, I like to be in their shoes. You know what I mean? You're just starting off your career, but these guys had sort of done it all. And then coming across them later on in life, and you've come back to Scotland and you've had a reasonable career up here.
Well, it didn't work out, as you said, but you moved up to Dumbarton. How did that transfer come around?
That transfer came around because, as I said, I'd get homesick and just and Dumbarton were one of the first senior teams to show an interest in me. I remember Davy Wilson and Sean Fallon come to my house before I'd went to Newcastle, and they wanted to sign me there. And then Newcastle appeared well. When you've got the choice of Dumbarton playing part-time, or you've got Newcastle, 2-year contract, I didn't really come into it. No regrets, I made a decision. I made the right decision. I went to Newcastle. So when I come back up from Newcastle, above that area where no loyalty and respect and all that, and my dad had said, you know, he had a big influence in his life and my life, and he says, well, got to go to Dumbarton. They were the ones that showed an interest for you. So I ended up going to Dumbarton because they were the first team to show interest, and that's how it honestly came about. And I was there 6 or 7 seasons. It was a good period. I enjoyed myself, enjoyed it there. You know, we got promoted and we played in the Premier League there in Dumbarton when Davy Wilson and that was the manager. Good players there at the time as well. And but I think I was here too long. It was a good environment. I was part time there. I was working for my father, so I was making the living, the same living I'd have made in Newcastle, because I got my part time wage at Dumbarton. My dad was making it up in the family business, so it was fine. It was good. But honestly speaking, I spent two, three seasons there, longer than I should have. And the reason for that being, the camaraderie and the dressing room and the friendly atmosphere with all the players and everything like that, you know, and that being a successful Dumbarton team at the time, you want to stay, you know. All successful teams have got a happy dressing room, a happy medium with your playing partners, you know, your playing buddies. So, but in those days as well, Ian, clubs held on to it. It was the days where clubs could hold on to it. It was very weighted in the side of the football clubs. You know, transfer fees were big in those days, and I tried to leave Dumbarton a couple of years before I did, and those were the days where they put an inflated price on you and wouldn't let you go. Kilmarnock came in for me a couple of seasons before they did. I knew they were interested in me, I knew they wanted me, but I couldn't go. They wouldn't. Dumbarton were holding on to a fee for me. Unfairly, I think, when you look at it now, but I think when you look since Bosman now, I think it's went too far in the favour of players. I think back then it was heavily weighted in the side of clubs, and I think it'd be better if you could get a sort of happy medium between the two of them, rather than, it's not too healthy when you've got swinging too much in the one direction. So at the end of my contract, Dumbarton, they changed their manager, and Bertie Alty came along to manage Dumbarton, and my contract was up. And Bertie said to me, Ray, you want to get away from here? I says, aye. He says, you know Kilmarnock's into it. I said, I know that. He says, don't come back. I goes, what? He says, don't come back. I said, this is the advice he's given me. Don't come back. And I said, okay, well, I'm taking a chance here. We'll come back. He says, you'll get your move. So I went and you'd call it a strike. I don't know, call it whatever you want. But fortnight's time and I got a phone call from Alec Wright, the director of Dumbarton at the time. He says, well, if I sorted out your freeway, Kilmarnock, you've got your wish here. You can go to Rugby Park and just go down there on Thursday night and sign your contract. So, and every time I ran into Bertie, God bless him, every time I ran into Bertie doing what I do now when I'm away representing the club for away games with the directors, occasionally I would run into Bertie at Parkhead, he would say to me, aye, remember that advice I gave you? Always remember it. Remember who gave you it? So he never ever let me forget that he got me the move from Dumbarton to Kilmarnock.
It's quite interesting in those days where managers could effectively become the agents for the players. That happened to Stevie Nicol when he left there United. He drove down with his manager and his manager negotiated his contract with Liverpool.
Yeah, it's all different. It's a different time, you know. We move on, like you like to think things get better, but it's different dynamics in football then and what it is now, you know. Whether it's better, whether it's not better, who knows? It's only relevant to the team you're actually playing in. So it is, and that's the way, and that was the laws and the way everything worked then, and you just had to go with it or represent yourself, or as you say, the manager would represent you or take a bit of advice from your parents or whatever. That's the way it was, because it was definitely weighted so much in the side of the football clubs. So in retrospect, the football clubs really just got themselves to blame for the situation that we get into now.
What was your memories of Boghead as a stadium? Because that's gone now.
Boghead, it was named Bog. You know, it was a very, very heavy pitch. You know, it wasn't the biggest of parts. You know, we were getting crowds of 2,000 people and all that. But I didn't know any better. You know, it was just how heavy it was, you know, the name Boghead. And listen, I had really, really good times at Dumbarton, really good times. And I've been through there the last few years. I've been the team that got promoted, got inducted into the Dumbarton Hall of Fame. I was very privileged to go along and get that night. I was the previous round of the Scottish Cup, I was through at Boghead. I was through at Dumbarton having a Scottish Cup night, and they've asked me along and they still welcome me with open arms when I go to Dumbarton. So they did, and it was an incredible time for that club as well, because Sir Hugh Fraser, the House of Fraser, he took over the club at the time, and they weren't short of a few bob when he was in charge. And you know, when you think of Dumbarton at that time, going pre-season tours and all that, and it was just unheard of. You know, it was really a really, really exciting time for the town and for the football club, as well as for the players that were there at the time, and I'm sure the directors as well, and we embraced it. You know, it's a fantastic time in my life as well.
I think you might be too much of a gentleman to answer this question, Ray, but I'm going to ask it. Why did Kilmarnock want to sign you? What did they see in Ray Montgomery that made them so desperate?
Well, Kilmarnock, at that time, when I said to Newcastle had wanted to sign me, the week before I signed for Newcastle, it was lauded, or Kilmarnock will sign Ray Montgomery. That's what was in the local papers and the paper at the time, that Kilmarnock are going to sign Ray Montgomery, and I never heard from them. So, but that's what was said, you know, that's what was reported at the time, that Kilmarnock were going to sign me, but they never did come for me. You know, I wish it had off at the time. You know, I was wanting it to happen, but it just wasn't to be at the time. But when you look back at it, I don't know the answer to that question. Obviously, maybe the scout maybe didn't fancy me. You know, he's a local scout. Maybe it did, but it certainly didn't happen. But you know, everything happens for a reason, and it's not worked out too bad for myself or Kilmarnock. You know, It's been a nice fit, you know. So it has. What people in your podcast probably definitely not know what it was. When I was at Newcastle, I was out injured and I had a broken toe, and when they found out I was wanting away, Newcastle, then Arthur Cox was the manager and he wasn't wanting to keep an unsappy player. So I came up to Kilmarnock and played a game for the reserves here out in the Rugby Park pitch before I signed for Dumbarton. And I never heard nothing else about it, so I couldn't have set the hired on fire that day or that for that particular game. And a lot of Kelly supporters won't know that. You know, I did have an appearance for Kilmarnock before I eventually got here.
It was Eddie Morrison was the manager that brought you in, but he was to move on quite quickly, and a certain Tommy Burns took over at Kilmarnock. What was your memories of working with Tommy?
It's probably the happiest time at this football club, was working under Tommy. Eddie had signed me, as you said. Eddie had signed me, a lovely man. He was an icon here at Rugby Park as well. He'd signed me, and within 3 or 4 months of Eddie signing me, he got the bullet. You know, and we got relegated in our first season here, and we ended up in the second division. Then I come up the leagues of first division, then Tommy Burns, as you say, we signed Tommy Burns, and then he became my manager. Not only was my teammate, but he became my manager, my football manager here. And when we got promotion into the Premier Division, he took me into his office, and he said he wanted to make me his captain, because of the few years we'd been through before that, demoting, getting promotion, that he says nobody's other deserving in it than me. So if he made me the captain, the first game we played against Dundee, you know, and that was a proud moment to be captain of the club. And then now when you look at it, and Tommy Burns has made you captain, and you played every game he was here, you know, so that's good enough for me. If Tommy Burns makes me captain of his team and puts me in his team and keeps me there till he goes away, I mean, that's good enough for me.
Was it kind of wholesale changes that Tommy made? Because he was always a kind of footballer. He was classy whenever he played, and Kilmarnock did play some very good stuff under him.
Played some very, very good stuff over him. Wholesale changes, not really. At the time, he didn't have an enormous budget. Tommy, you know, the club had just came from a transition from part-time to full-time. He had a lot of experienced players, so he'd managed to talk round, and a lot of hard-working grafters in his team. And the demands he put on us every day were high, you know, and continued that all through that season. We ended up with the fittest team in the league. He knew what levels we had to get to. And, you know, there's no superstars in the league. We just played for each other. A band of brothers on that team. You know, it was a really, really solid group of players that we had here at that time. And you've got to remember that time, that first year as well, when Tommy came to keep the club up. 3 teams out of 12 went down in the Premier League that year. And that was a cult. I was just looking at it earlier, and it was so steep, that, you know, stacked against us that we wouldn't stay up that year. It was unreal. It went to the last game of the season, where we needed a draw or that against Hibs through Easter Road, and we got, and that was nerve-wracking. A couple of weeks before that game, Tommy Burns had took us out to the back part and explained to us, you know, if we don't stay up in the Premier League this year, lads, he says there'll not be full-time football here next year. And that was the enormity of what was resting in that one game. So it was a fantastic achievement for the club. And for Tommy, you know, he put it down as his best achievement, you know, as well. He's documented, that's what he said as well, when we got that result at Easter Road that day.
Well, Tommy inevitably, it seems, went to Celtic. It always was destined for that to happen. Fate steps in a little bit again, because the next man that takes over, Alex Totten, was going to become your opponent in the Cup Final in 97. I take it Alex was a very kind of different type of manager from Tommy.
Oh, totally different. You know, Tommy's more of a tactician, more relied on the fitness and it is drilled in a certain way, in a certain work ethic, a certain way that we approach games and what we were like. Alec came in maybe a slightly older sort of attitude maybe towards it, where maybe Alec depended more on the player, individual players, where Tommy so important that we all played as a unit, we all knew what we were doing within that. Alec had been a manager of mine previously at Dumbarton, so I'd known Alec before he came. And when Alec came here, Alec had a tough time, because Tommy left such a solid grip, solid bunch of players, you know. And when Alec came in, Alec wanted to put his own stamp in the team, like all managers do, and a couple of players maybe didn't fit into Alec's way of doing things, and that team started to split up a little bit. And that's always difficult, and I think it's difficult for managers when they go to clubs when they've taken over one that's been successful or been doing well. Things don't happen straight away. It takes time for it to happen. And during the time that Alec was here, I think he was here for just two and a half years, two and a couple of months. It wasn't really working out for him to finish up. And he left us in the November, I'm sure, 96. And Bobby then took over, another teammate of mine took over. And as fate would have it, as you went to the start of your question there, Alec went to Falkirk. And that's who we played in the cup final that season, was Falkirk.
Is it difficult for you as a captain when there is kind of fragmentation with the squad and management? Because some players could possibly see you as part of the extension of management and maybe not trust you. Do you have to be some kind of, I don't want to say isolated, but do you have to kind of compartmentalise yourself from the rest of the squad when you're skipper?
I never looked at it like that. I didn't ever feel isolated, or I didn't. Players that I've been here for such a long time that my teammates knew what sort of person I am and whose side I was on, and I was the one that would take to deal with bonuses, tickets or something like that, you know what I mean? I was never one for, managers do tell certain, not necessarily a captain, managers sometimes get close to players, and some managers maybe lean in certain players. No, I didn't feel that happened to me. You do hear things sometimes, you don't repeat. But no, I think the guys at the time know me and know what I stand for, and no, and it was always about the team. It was all about my teammates, and it's always about that. It's always having their back. You know, you can't any successful team like you can't have any division within it. You know, and things happened and maybe the build up to the cup final that maybe I didn't agree on, but most of the team would agree on. And at the end of the day, I'm the captain of the team, and I've got to be on their side rather than the club side. So you're not going to be a success. You know, if you're siding with the board or something like that, I can take the board's point of view. I'm particularly talking about bonuses here, you know, things like that. Sometimes there comes a division between the board of directors and the players. The players maybe think they're worth X, Y, Z. The board think, no, this is that. So there's a bit of give and take there. But and sometimes, in the particular occasion that season, I maybe didn't agree with what the player was happening with the players. I probably agreed more, but I could see the board's point of view in it. But you've got at the end of the day, you're a team player. They're your mates. They're the guys you're out there that's got your back, and they're the ones you've got to stick by. So I never ever show that.
Well, here's a kind of extension to that question then. But Bobby Williamson coming in, former player, becomes manager. Does that become awkward within the squad?
I would say awkward. Personally speaking, it didn't become awkward for myself. Maybe for some other players, it would become awkward for them. Maybe some other players, like any management change, would welcome the change. You know, players that's not in the team, maybe at that time Bobby or any other manager would be gone, when maybe the players would get another chance or something like that. Or maybe in Bobby's case, Bobby likes some young lads. and he put some young lads at the team. Maybe if either manager Alec Hibney, maybe the other guys wouldn't have got a chance. You know, I can't. I think it's a question that if you're to ask individual players, they'll all think they'll give you a different answer. You know, me particularly, I didn't feel under any. With Bobby taking over, I'd played with Bobby. I knew everything about Bobby. I know what he's like. You know, he had my back. You know, he's my manager. We both wanted the same thing. We wanted the success of the football club. So we did. And so, aye.
Well, what was Bobby like as a manager?
As a manager, Bobby was. Bobby's cut his teeth here with Alec Taunton. You know, he'd a lot. Reserves. You know, he took the reserves and took the young lads. Began and Burke, he just, what I said earlier, he put them into the side. I mean, maybe an older manager like Alec wouldn't have done that. Maybe we'd have won that cup. So that's what Bobby was like. You know, he's very much for giving the youth a chance. I'm not saying it was always right. I mean, because I think I've got to reach a balance. And I'm sure Bobby, looking back in his managerial career, he would say, he's made some mistakes. He got it wrong at times. And hey, there's lots of managers. We don't all get it right, eh? You know, players or managers. Bobby was different the way that, you know, he's a wee bit flipping at times, you know, actually unique.
Well, you got it right. You got it very right in 1997, starting off in January. You had a tie against East Stirlingshire. Massive crowd as well, 8,500 at Rugby Park. That shows that there was a lot of kind of belief in the squad at the time.
Yeah, started off against East Stirling. I don't think I wasn't playing that day. You know what I mean? I don't know what happened, but injured, or maybe it was just dropped, you know what I mean? Maybe Bobby just dropped me that too. I can't remember, it's that long ago. But it was an ideal start. We had a cup, you've got to be thankful if you get a home draw. At that time, honestly, you're still at home. Did you think you're going to go in and finish up at winning in 1997? Probably not. You know, we probably didn't think. I think all guys in that squad or that game probably thought, no, we didn't realise that's where it would end up. But we overcame that hurdle and momentum started to grow.
And it grew into the next tie against Clyde in February. A Paul Wright penalty getting you through that tie.
Yeah, when you get the other draw and it's Clyde and you're looking at it and you're saying, you know, you look at the results in the league, we're starting to pick up. You know, I'm playing then as well, and a wee bit of momentum, you're playing against Clyde, and all of a sudden your league form's starting to improve. You've got this game against Clyde to get into the quarter-final, and you beat Clyde, then you're in the quarter-final of the Scottish Cup, and your league form's good. So then, a month earlier, thinking, I don't know where it'll lead to, the league form is good. They're beating Clyde. You're now in the quarter final. Now you're starting to get a wee bit of a roll.
We're in the quarter final against Morton at Capello, one of the best stadiums in Scottish football, in my opinion. And it was a heck of a performance as well, 5-2 against Morton.
Yeah. Great stadium, I must say. I enjoyed going to Capello every time I played there, whether it be Dumbarton or whether it be with Kilmarnock. I think it's a fantastic atmosphere that you get, a true football stadium. We're going there in the quarter final of the cup, and we've beat them, you know, 5-2. And great crowd there. The place is absolutely jumping, you know, and you come away from that, the league form's still going well. You're in the quarter final. You've beat Morton. Here we go. This isn't a lot. We find ourselves all of a sudden, we're in the last four of this competition. Anything can happen now, it's a lot. Winning the Scottish Cup, you need the luck of the draw, you need to be the form tied at the time. And fortunately enough, we were that, so we find ourselves, we get into the semi-final draw, and we're drawing against the United. So we're in the other semi-final, I'm sure it's Celtic against Falkirk. And I remember going through and the draw on the television, the draw happening, all that, all the captains, because I was there representing the club, and coming away. I'm saying, oh, that's, I'll take that draw. You know, I'll take that draw. And it's not played at Hampden. It's supposed to be a neutral venue because Hampden's under renovation at the time. So they have to play it at Easter Road. Okay, so we go and we play it at Easter Road. In the first game, I think arguably were the best side against United in the first half, but it ends in a draw. So we've got to go to a replay. And then we 1-0, we win the game 1-0, and it's an up and tuck game, you know. I'm not saying, you know, could go either way. Maybe I Marlock fans would say we hedged it, didn't United, maybe say they hedged it, but the excitement's going. So there they find yourself, you're in this final. You're in the final. And that semi final game, to me personally, from my football career, a lot of people will say, well, obviously you go in and you win the cup and that's the biggest game. But that semi-final game, that was the best I'd felt, you know, just to realise after that replay that you always think about it, you never really think it's happened. That's us in the Scottish Cup final. I can't believe it. In the Scottish Cup final, we got Mark, how's that? Well, we've done that. Yes. And another semi-final, Polk had beat Celtic. So you say to yourself, oh, jeez, you're in the final of the Scottish Cup. You're playing Falkirk. And we find ourselves the favourites. And you know, because we're in the Premier Division team. All of a sudden, within this week, we're in the final of the Scottish Cup. And we find ourselves the favourites to win it. And that brings its own pressure. That brings other pressure with it. And we're still doing well in the league. We're still doing well in there. But we've got to secure our league position. Which we did do. We secured that. So the week before it, a couple of weeks before it, we secured that. And we're in the cup final. We find ourselves in the cup final against Falkirk. And it's anybody's game.
Well, one of the kind of lazy kind of tropes that journalists like myself would use, Kilmarnock in that position, if they lost the game in the league, would say, oh, they weren't focused on the game. They were thinking about the cup final. Is that a reality? Can players think ahead towards such a big game like the cup final, or is it just simply match by match? It doesn't matter.
There again, it comes down to the individual that's playing in your team. I can only personally think for myself, and only go what other boys think and what the managers think, the manager, coaching staff, and all your fellow players. They're all concentrating the next game. They'll tell you they're concentrating the next game. And you take it, that's what they're doing. Me personally, I was concentrating in the next game. I wasn't looking too far ahead. I never looked too... So I'd have to say that players would concentrate in that game. You've got to be so focused on what you're doing. I mean, it's so important that we stayed in the league. You know, we could have found ourselves in the Scottish Cup final relegated. You know, and it would be unthinkable. So you've got to... At that time, so many important games coming up. You've got to just take one game at a time. It's an old cliche, one game at a time. But I can't give you anything else on that other than it is just that game. Every game is more important than the next. At that time, Kilmarnock Football Club, the games we were playing, the cup games, the league game, every game was important. Every game, you couldn't think too far ahead, so you couldn't. But once you've gone to that cup final. You've got to secure that league position, you know. You just had to secure that league position. Once that league position's secured and you're in the cup final, then your focus and attention is all in that day and all in that game.
Well, when you're playing in the league, you've got a kind of schedule that you work to, in for training certain days, eating certain days, seeing family at certain times, etc., etc. How is it different for you as a player in the week running up to the Scottish Cup final?
The week running up, I would say 10 days a week running up to that Scottish Cup final is probably the busiest time in my entire life and my entire career. So it was, you found yourself, you're captain of the team, so you and your teammates, you've got your training, you've got your bonuses to talk about with the board of directors. there's issues, other issues going on at the time. You're speaking about the with the directors. So you've got that happen. You're getting in. You're getting interviewed every day. I've got a daily column in the newspaper. Paul Wright's doing the Daily Record. I'm doing the press for the Sun. 2 hours are allocated that daily to put in the build up to the final. You've got all the supporters at Kilmarnock who are going to the game, also securing tickets for the game. You're securing your own family's tickets for the game. That business that my dad has up pub, I've got eight buses leaving my pub to go to this game at Ibrox, this Scottish Cup final. At Kilmarnock at the time, here's a look, I'm out. I'm the captain. It's Bobby and me. It's doing everything in the run up to the game. More due respect, you know. You've got best dress window competition to judge and come on. Like, you're going round your sponsors. You're going through all the businesses of the town, see who's got the best. You're attending this club or that club. You're going to ask. And Bobby and me had that to do. I just happened to be in that position because I was the captain at the time. So I was doing that, and you couldn't think. And over and above that, you've got your training to think about. That's the most important thing. You've got to focus about who you're preparing for this final, and you're training every day. It's just absolute bedlam. I was so busy. I didn't really get time to think about the cup final. That sounds bizarre, but it was a case of happening. I remember we had the night before the final. You try to keep things as normal as you can, and we got the option. Bobby gave us the option whether we wanted to go to stay the night in a hotel or whether we wanted to sleep in our own beds with our family. And the guys, we didn't want, most of the guys decided to go to the hotel, and other guys like myself who had families decided we didn't want to stay in a hotel. We have the option staying in our own house or with our own family and meeting up the following day. So I did that because I wanted to keep it as normal as I can. And then the day we all meet together at the hotel, and before we got up to the Ibrox that day, we're all on the bus, we're all saying our goodbyes to our family, see their red hot day. And I remember going up to Ibrox, and you're getting nearer and nearer, you're seeing the crowd, you're seeing a blue and white flags, you're seeing everyone, you know, everybody in the, you know, and everybody, and you could see some of the guys, well, they're focused on it. But, I didn't feel nervous at all. I felt that's the best I'd felt. I just, because I think I'd done so much in the build-up, I think all my nervous energy must have been used. I'd heard everything about it. That's all I was talking about every day was this cup final. So I feel as if that energy, that nervous energy was used up. And then when I got there, I was totally fine and totally at ease. It was straight. I've never felt that before approaching a game. Normally when you're out there in the game, you're sitting there, you're churning and all that. That's a good thing, you know. But I was a bit nervous, but none compared to the semi-final. None compared to the game against Rangers. We had to beat them. None. The Hibs games are the big games I'd played. Not a nervousness like that in the cup final, which you think that's odd. And I put that down to the time I'd spent with people, with supporters, with businesses, with sponsors, with newspapers, with the media, with training, with my teammates. I put it all down to all that had been used up then.
And you had a very kind of strong sense of character in the squad as well. Some very kind of forthright players that went on to management. You also had a very kind of interesting character and goals for that final.
Yeah, Drago Lekovic, you know, is... Big Drago, you get Gustav, you know, he's a massive keeper. He's a safe pair of hands, you know. He had a presence as well. He had a presence and goal, you know. He's tall. I like goalkeepers that sort of come for the ball, you know, what they're going to do. And Drago was like that, you know. And I can't say anything against him because in that cup final, you know, he brought off a save right in the dying minutes. He threw his cell right across the face of the goal and watched a ball at the top left-hand corner. And so I says, just for that, Drago will always be there. I'll always recognise he's up there right with the goalkeepers, you know. But a nice big guy, so it was. And he took a big, that was a big step in his life as well, leaving his country and coming here to ply his trade and what he'd done here. He also went on to be the goalkeeping coach and for the national team as well.
Mm.
So he did.
You also had Gus McPherson, Gary Holt, Jim McIntyre, kind of guys that went on at the management.
All guys who went on to management, all guys that knew the game, so it was. And I think that must have helped them later on in their management careers as well, that experience.
And of course, up front, you had the guy just couldn't stop scoring.
Up front, we had Paul Wright, you know, and Paul was a right predator of goal. You know, he knew where the goals were, so he did. Great finisher of the ball, great finisher at all. I played against the best of the strikers. Paul must be up there. I mean, when you think the goals that he scored here, if he'd been playing a top level with a top, I'm not saying we were at our level, we played the best we can, but he could have scored a lot of goals. But everybody had their part to play in the side, even the guys that were unfortunate not to play that day, the guys that didn't make, I mean, our squad went down to, thinking that day it was 18, then it dropped to the 13, it could only take part, you know, it started off at 20, so you feel for the guys that didn't play, and on reflection you say to yourself, at the time you're just worried about yourself, eh? You just want to be playing so much yourself, and you're bothered about yourself, and you want to be the one that's playing, you don't think anybody else. It sounds terrible. It's as if it's greed. It's just horrible. You know, you just when you think back, you're just thinking so much yourself. You want to play that much yourself and do the best you can do. You don't think when somebody's been left out how that maybe have affected them or how close they were to for doing that. And when you look back at it, you know, we all had our part to play. You know, there's guys that maybe didn't have played in the final, played in the earlier rounds, or came on in other games. They had a big part to play, a massive part to play in that success.
Well, everybody had a massive part to play. The fact you're running all up and you still had to see out the final. What are your memories of what it was like after you were up? Because Falkirk had some really talented players. Kevin McAllister was on that side, Paul McGrillan, Andy Gray was lethal with his throw-ins from what I remember. Kevin James was 8'9" and kept growing.
Yes, they were, I think what you're saying is a tall side, land of the Giants. Yeah, but Bobby had his drill in who was picking up who, and we just knew that if we knew going into that game, we knew if we played to the best we could play, we'd be the team that came out on top, you know, so we did. We applied ourselves and gave as much as what they were. We knew we'd be the team that came out on top. We took the lead and we managed. Defence was good. We were solid, you know. If we could get them in front, then it's up to us. When you're 1-0 up, it's up to you then, eh? They've got to score 2 to beat you. And I'm looking at them saying, oh, I'm not going to score. They're not going to score today, you know. And so it's quite, we were confident. We were a confidence there with that squad. As the game's dying away, suddenly score that goal out the boy that score that goal from a throw in and then everybody just your whole world ends, you saying, you know, geez, that's us going to one each, and then disallowed the goal because it's been side, you know, so it was a bit exciting there towards the end. It was a fantastic occasion. We spoke about the build up the game earlier, and it just came into my thought there. The actual just jumping back, I don't want to be jumping back, but just jumping back to the actual the day of the final. You know, I failed to mention to you, but what I mentioned, where I stayed in Salk, which, you know, Bobby Leonard's, now we're talking legends, you know, Scottish football. I had a wee boy, Bobby used to come out the park, play with us and all that. And he stayed a lot, so we know each other. So at the day of the final, he's just 2-3 doors along from me. He stayed, and I'm at the breakfast the day of the cup final, and the kids are playing about there. I'm at breakfast, and a knock came at my back door, and Alison had answered the door, and it was Bobby, And then Alison shouted to me, "Oh, it's Bobby." So Bobby came into the kitchen that morning, the Scottish Cup final. And it was very kind of, very, very nice of him to do that. And he's just there, obviously, when he calmed me down and gave me a few tips or that or something like that. He spent about half an hour speaking to us. And I was saying to him, "Bobby, that's all right for you coming in and saying, I'm very, very grateful," I says. But he says, "Just take it easy." He says, your time will go by so quick and it will over before you. Just make the most of that. I says, "Bobby, that's all right for you," saying, "you know, you've won 8 Scottish Cups, you know, 10 championships or whatever." I says, "This is the first I've only played in schoolboy finals. This is a Scottish Cup final." He says, "They're all the same." I says, "They're all the same European Cups." I says, "I find that hard to believe." I says, "But I'll take your word for it anyways. I'm not likely to get to a European Cup final." And he says, "Honestly, I wish you all the best. Love you. Love you to win it, you know." And I said, "Oh, I really appreciate you coming along. That's so kind of you." He says, "Anyway, my way, you've got to get on with your preparation, you know what it is." So he went away, you know, and then the door trapped again, and I opened the door, and it was Bobby and he was there again. He goes, "Just think of it, Ray." I says, "What's that, Bobby?" He says, "See if you win the Scottish Cup today." Oh, I says, "I hope I do." He says, "Well, that'll be 9 Scottish Cup winners medals in the one street. No many streets in Scotland can bum about that, son." Just thought I'd add that wee story in for you.
Here's a question, because a lot of football is about mental preparation. You've got to have your kind of, well, players kind of run through scenarios a lot of the time. Had you had any countenance that you would be walking up steps, picking up a trophy and lifting it? Had you practiced that in your mind?
Practice that in my mind? No. I think every youngster, I can't say that's wrong way to say that. I wanted to play football all my life. I wanted to be a football player. That's all I wanted to be, a footballer. Growing up, football was my life. You think you're going, you know, I always thought I'd be a footballer. I don't know what level you get to that, but I always thought I'd be, and that's for other people to say how I done. I'm not interested, but I fulfilled my dream, you know, and I'm happy with that, you know what I mean? I'm happy and contented with my life. You do think, oh, great to win a cup, great to win the Scottish Cup, great to win that. You do think about that. Did I think about that? Not really, but I did think about it. You know, so we're that way, you know, I didn't mentally prepare my mind for that until I knew it was achievable. But I had thought about it long before I achieved it, if that's making any sense to you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, are you subconsciously in their mind? The mind subconsciously by thinking it years previous. Is that included in your preparation? That's for others to sign. That's too deep for me to say.
We get to see the trophy presentation. We get to see the captain, the manager interviewed. Somebody always sticks the kind of lid of the trophy in their head, and it cuts away. What do we not see? What happens once you go back into the dressing room and then later on that night?
Well, and that what you don't see that night is you go back up, you get into the dressing room and you're celebrating like no other, you know, as if, I think you do sometimes see it now because of social media now. I think you do see teams celebrating that now, but you get into the dressing room, you celebrate as euphoria, you know, and then what you have to do is what you don't see is all the players together doing that and how they celebrate. On that occasion, we come back to Kilmarnock and we get an open top bus tour around the town. You see all that. We come back here at Rugby Park. You see all that. You see that. You see it on the television that night. You see us all celebrating that. What you don't see in situations like that is when you've got that cup with you, maybe you're getting access to it that you wouldn't know what happened. And I remember what you don't see is myself, I took a trip down to a local church, and people in there never saw that and they've never seen it. Supporters don't see that. They don't see what the players maybe do with it when they've been successful. I remember that, and I see it, and that's and all the people who was in our church here, and our boys' brigade, and our Sundays, the congregation. You don't see that, but they all, that's all, and that's all massive part of their life as well. I mean, only last Sunday at my church, a lady for the Sunday school brought in a picture of me with the Scottish Cup and taken with our football team at the church. Honestly, Ian, I remember taking the cup there. I do remember it, but I can't remember that photograph. Be getting older, that is it. So much happened to me in such a small period of time, you know. But just shows you that stays. See every kid in that photograph.
Mm-hmm.
That's a memory that they've got. If you know what I'm saying, you don't see all this. You don't realise. You see a team winning a cup, and they celebrate the cup. What I'm saying to you is, when that cup's been won and achieved, well, you don't understand what it brings to the. What it brings to the club, what it brings to the community. You know, we don't see all that. You know, when that cup, when we brought it here, and what it meant to people here, what it going into the schools with it. You know, going into taking into the heart of our community. What it meant to all these people, all these kids then who are now adults who still talk about it to this day. We don't see all that, but that's the thing that success brings to a football club. It's a particularly a trouble of a sale and the achievement that it brings. Whereas I feel with the, you mentioned earlier, the Old Firm, I feel they miss out on that a wee bit.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like to, I think they do miss it. I think the Old Firm fans, the Rangers and Celtic fans, maybe take it a wee bit, not for granted, so to speak, but they're doing it more often than the rest of us. That clubs like Marcel, Kilmarnock, community clubs who are in the heart of our community, when clubs like Marcel win it, it means so, so much to our supporters, to our community, to the people who's involved in it, who's worked hard to get it, to the people who's at our club, you know what I mean, who's not necessarily the football side yet. Throughout our club and throughout these clubs, what it means to the people, you know, and I seen what it meant to people here. At the time, people that's no longer with us, but meant so much to their family, and are still talking about it to this day. I mean, I took it down. Scottish Cup sat at the end there. My bar in Solgates, you know what I mean, and what it meant to the people just there. You know, that's bizarre when you think about it. Our national trophy. And it's touched so many people's life. The Scottish Cup since Kilmarnock won it, and it's touched my life. It's touched every player and. Person that was associated with Kilmarnock, and I mean every one of us who helped achieve it. I was fortunate enough to play that day and be part of that, but everybody about here had their part to play, directors, backroom staff, people at work, the administration staff, everybody at Kilmarnock mucked in there, and we were lucky enough to do it. The support had their part to play in it as well, and football's for the support, that's what it's about, you know, and I think we always are selling. Football's about supporters, you know, it's what it means to them, and that's what we don't see. When teams win cups, you see what it means to the, you see what it means to the team that's playing, the captain, or you see what it's mean to the captain or the manager, they do the lap alone, you can't hide what it means to them, because you see it. But when you delve under, when you dig deeper and deeper, and when they take that cup home, and that cup, people round the club, supporters round the club, supporters of your team and in your community, get to see it, get to come and see it, get to hold it, get their pictures taken with it. It means so, so much to so, so many people.
Well, that's a very good point. Alan Graham won the League Cup with Raith Rovers and he won it at Ibrox. You won the Scottish Cup at Ibrox, and Ali said his only regret was maybe that he didn't get to win it at Hampden. Was that something that maybe you think... Thinking back, maybe it would have been just the icing on the cake if it was at Hampden.
You know something, I've been asked that a couple of times, Ian, and I can honestly say to you that it didn't make a difference to me. I just look upon myself, it was a cup final, it was a Scottish Cup final. I was so fortunate to be in a position that we won it, and I'm so grateful and thankful for that, rather than where it took place. And that's the honest answer. Hampden's got that, yeah, Hampden National Stadium, that Batsworth Cup. That's where it was played. It was here to win. I'm so grateful that I was in a position that we all done it, and it didn't make any difference to me personally where it happened.
Well, the victory in the Scottish Cup final opened up an avenue for you next season, because you got to have a little jaunt in Europe, took on Shelburne in the first time, got through against Shelburne, and it set up a really kind of tasty game against Nice in the south of France.
Yeah, it certainly did, you know. Listen, I've came from Kilmarnock. I've been relegated to the second division. I came here with part-time football, been promoted to the first division, been promoted to the Premier Division. You've won the Scottish Cup. You're now into Europe. My life was just, at 5-6 years, my life, I just didn't know everything happened, so it was happening so quick, and it was coming to the end, relatively speaking, the end of my career, and this is all happening, and you find yourself, you're going to play in Nice, European Cup Winners' Cup, Kilmarnock Football Club are chartering planes from Prestwick to take your team and your support to the Côte d'Azur to play in Nice in the Cup Winners' Cup. I mean, does it get any better than that? A big boy for Solskjaer, and you're getting a private plane, and you're going to play in Nice in the European Cup Winners' Cup. It was fantastic, you know. Not only that game, but Bobby was right. Your career and that, was by so quick. I savoured every single minute of it, loved every single minute of it. So it did, and it was just things I experienced in my life that I never ever dreamt of experiencing, and it all happened here at Kilmarnock. So then, and it couldn't have happened at a better place.
And you eventually had to move on for Kilmarnock. You had to make a move to Partick Thistle. Was that difficult for you emotionally to make a move away?
It was incredibly difficult emotionally. Took me a bit of time to go over that. You know, you've been here 11 seasons, so you have, and Bobby's your manager, and Bobby's your... You've been successful. There's no doubt you've been successful. The season I left, I'm reading the Player of the Year awards, and I know they don't go for nothing, but with the supporters, with the local programme, the papers and all that, I'm up at front. I reckon I'm playing well. In principle, I've got a contract in the Christmas time of the year before I left. In principle, I've got it. Then finding out at the end of the season that it's no longer there. For one reason, it's no longer there, you take it hard, you take it personally, and then the club at the time not been totally too upfront in what was really happening concerning myself at the time, and how my negotiations were going and how I was leaving, and it was a sad time, you know, and I didn't want to leave, and they were looking at roles for me here. They looked into me. They wanted me to go through my coaching badges here. They wanted me to take a chief sort of scout job on a sort of part-time basis. They wanted me to do that. So they were going round things, you know what I mean? At the time, all I'd wanted was another year. See, I felt I'd played enough, long enough. I didn't want out of sentiment. I felt I deserved it for the way I was performing. I understood the need to bring younger ones through, and I'd be the first one to sit up aside. But I believe it, no matter what age you are, whether you're 18, 19, whether you're well into your 30s, I've always believed if you're good enough, and you're the one that's good enough, you're fit enough, you're the one that should be playing. That's where I maybe differed with the manager team. So me and Bobby sort of agreed to disagree sort of thing. And that went on for a wee while when I left. I admit that, you know, we didn't have any difficulty really. We're fine with each other now, you know, but it boils down to, let's keep things simple. I wanted to stay. Kilmarnock management or the directors of that team obviously didn't want me to stay, or I would have signed a contract. That's in black and white, isn't it? But I left. I went to Partick Thistle. And it was a fantastic experience. I honestly loved the year I was at Partick Thistle, playing under John Lambie. I regret not playing for him young when I regret not playing for him when I was younger, when I was at the start of my career. Me and him hit it off. He was just, he took management to a different level altogether. So he did. They were so nice people. They welcomed me, but they couldn't do enough for me up at Thistle. So it does. But up at Partick Thistle, it was sort of part-time, full-time. I was full-time, but the part-time players were coming in that Tuesday or Thursday. I was going in Monday, Wednesday, Friday to train with the full-time players. I felt I was playing well. They made me captain there. My fitness levels were good. I was supposed to bring them up to me, but honestly, in trying to, I ended up getting caught. I was actually getting brought down rather than, what was working in reverse. It wasn't supposed to work that way. I was supposed to go there and bring them up to a standard that, but I was just, it was virtually impossible with the mindset and everybody I was playing with. I got caught and I was coming down to their sort of level rather than they, not football-wise, knowing that, and a mental attitude, mentally, it was tough going. And at the end of the season, John had wanted me then to think about the coaching thing and the coaching side of Thistle and still playing and all that. And I tied it up and I just said, that's it. And my wife, Alison, she was disappointed in me, to say the least at the time, because I just went, that's it, all finished. That's me bye. And I'm fine. She said, that's me bye. What are you going to do? Said, that's me bye. I'm finished. I'd used up so much. I was exhausted with football, mentally exhausted. My final years here and the big games and going there, going to Thistle and getting brought down. I was, all the interviews, I was mentally drained. I was physically able to go on, but I was mentally drained. I'd had enough mentally, and I decided to call it a day. And I remember, and do I regret it to this day? Yes, I do, because I remember Billy Stark when he was the manager, not the manager, when he was the assistant to Tommy Burns. Billy saying to me when he was coming to the end of, or he was playing the odd game at the end of his career, he says, never give in, never give up football at the end of a season. Go and do your part, go and do your training pre-season. And if after your pre-season training, you feel like giving up, that's the time to give up. Looking back now, that was really good advice, but I didn't take that advice then. I was so mentally, I gave up at the end of the season. I should probably waited that 6 or 8 week period to give my mind a rest, not my body, give my mind a rest to see where I was. I should have left the door open. What I did was, I was too quick to say, that's me bye. Offered jobs when John Conley, Queen of the South, you know, who previously, and Partick Thistle, saying no to two of them. And in an interview, and after that, I never got asked another job in football after that, because I'd put the nail in my own coffin, sort of thing, by doing that interview. That's me bye with football, no interest in management, totally exhausted with it, and I shut down everything. I never got another offer after I gave that interview. I reflect now and seen it all. When you look back, you're scrapping that, you see Monty calls a hold to football, and that, not getting involved with football. It's my own doing, you know. It's my own doing, and that's the way I felt at the time. But luckily enough, just half 6 months or something, a year, just after, just working in the business. A year after that, the board of directors at the club, I got a call, and they'd asked me back here to come and do sort of commercial stuff and host lounges and do things like that, and they wanted me back to do that or anything else I wanted to do. So I came, and not an interview, but sat down with them, and I'll come back and I'll do that. So I came back here and do it 30 hours a week or something like that, hosting the lounges and going to away games with the directors representing what I'm basically doing now. So I was back to, and I really, really enjoyed it. It's back to the club I loved, back to the people I loved, and, you know, it was in full cycle. And then when I lost my parents, I had to give that up. So I had to give the hours up to concentrate in the business. And but what I didn't, what I promised the directors was I couldn't come into, I wouldn't be commit myself to do away games or anything like that. But what I've said to us, what I'll do is, I'll keep hosting your lounge on a Saturday for you. I'll keep that going. Will you? I'll keep that going. I'll not let you down. I'll host your lounge. And that seemed to be important to them. So I kept hosting the lounges going and sort of part-time basis sort of thing. And then 9, 10 years ago or something, my director, Billy Hoon, my director now, he was up in the boardroom and asked me to, if I'd come along, so I spent some time here, more a full-time basis, go back to doing what I was doing, come back to commercial side of things, you know, selling the club. He was conscious of the fact that the club was over, it was a bee. We're going over a hard spell at the time, and he was just fresh into the football club. He'd been a successful businessman, and he wanted to, for people to see him sort of through me. And he let me, and I said, "Oh well," I said, "I've heard all this before, but I said, we'll get it for 3 weeks. We'll do it for 3 weeks if you keep it going for 3 weeks and see how I feel at the end of it, and I'll tell you whether I can do it or not." And he seemed a decent enough fella, and what happened was, that was 9 years ago, and I'm still here now, doing the hours that we set out to do. And so we've got a good understanding of each other. He's been very good for this football club, and a solid enough guy, you know. He's a guy like myself, he can shake your hand, he's old school that way. He's a guy you can trust, and he can trust me, and he lets me on what I've got to do, and there's absolutely, honestly, and you couldn't work it out of place. I'm not just saying that, but it's actually, you couldn't have it. I don't, but is it because I played here or not? Is it because I won the Scottish Cup? Everything's so good. I don't know. It's just fantastic. Anyway, I really, really enjoy it. And I don't get involved in the football side because that's not my gig. It's nothing to do with me. They don't want a players' management. I stay away from all that. You know, they don't want an older guy going over here. It's nothing to do with me. I concentrate solely in the commercial side of things, you know, representing the club as best I can. And, you know, something, because the football career's finished, that doesn't mean to say at least finishing with that, you know, it ends here. I've got targets I want. I've got crossbar. I've got targets I want to hit off the field now. You know, it's not just on the field. I've got things I wanted to do, like since I've came, Billy's gave me the reins. I've set up a former players association. I've got a database with all the former players. Now come into our lounges, they do Killy Television. They take part in a club of getting tickets for games. Involving players who were never ever back at the club. You know, I come up with the idea of having that, and the board of directors, like, if I come up with an idea, they just say to me, "Get on with it." And it's great, I mean it. So they trusted me a bit. Now I've got all these former players coming, big golf days, whatever event I can get them and do my Killy Tell. And those players, it's a tremendous outreach thing for them as well, because they get so much out of it. Because when players retire from football, their mental health can affect their mental health as well. Because when I was playing football, I played football 21 years, but 11 years here at Kilmarnock. I've never took a drug in my life and no intention to do so, never. But I'd liken it to a drug. Every single day, you need it every day. I mean, yeah, people are needing, it feels as if people, you know, you're getting loaded with a support or something like that. Man, I was very fortunate going, well, support. You're loaded with that. You're getting press, interesting, the media people's interested in you. Everybody's wanting a piece of it. And see when these guys retire, that's no longer there. That's just ends like that. You know, mid-30s or well, that's it ends. These guys might have to go maybe do something else. So it affects everybody. It affects all these players. And these players coming back, doing a simple thing like Killy Television, you have no idea what the feedback I get from players. That's the best thing you've done, Monday. Oh, come on, looking after us. It's probably the best thing that since playing. You know what a gap has put down in these players' lives now. They're feeling part of Kilmarnock, they're feeling part of football again. And they feel part of it. That's only what I'm experiencing here at Kilmarnock. I dare say other clubs might experience the same, but I can only tell you what I'm experienced here with our former players. So I can, you do things like that. Yeah, when it was 150 year anniversary, I came up with an idea. I'd like to get replica trophies of the Scottish Cup, the League Championship trophy, and the League Cup, because 150 year old, we've won three trophies. Initially, we helped fund the Scottish League when it started in the Sunlight onset. I says, I know you can get replicas. So you go to the board and you say, oh, this is what I'm thinking of doing, guys. When you go and do it? And they let me go and do it. And you go and get sponsors, and as long as they're not, they know you can, know you do it. So luckily, you get three great sponsors through Kilmarnock sponsors, who are Kilmarnock minded people, to sponsor the cups. You go through the process with SFA, the league, and you get cups, you get replica cups, and the replica cups are here and they're in our museum, and the crowd, your fan base can see them, you know, and your education programs can get run through them, your community programs get run through them, replica cups of these that the club have won, and it's fantastic. And the board of directors just let you get on with it. Memorial Garden has spent what that's brought to our club is an immeasurable amount of what that's brought to the club. What a new reach program that is, and for mental health and for people, and people have lost loved ones. We, as I said to you, we've lost eight former footballer players, soldier, one in the Navy, in two world wars. You know, these players were not forgotten about, but I said it'd be great to honour them in some way, and came up with the idea of Memorial Garden. Why do you go and do it? Get funding. And that's when our council comes in. We've got such a great relationship with the council here. East Ayrshire Council's been first class with us. They really, really have. They back everything we do. Back everything. And we work closely with them. Work so closely with them. And they got us funded through them and through the proper channel. We got funded for Memorial Garden. And what's in there? We have a service of remembrance every November. And what we found the service remembrance now is people who have lost a loved one or something like that, who have sadly passed away, they've got an opportunity to buy a brick and a wall, and it's a beautiful granite, tasteful brick. They put up in the memorial wall. They'll come in and we'll do a wee service for them. We'll use our club chaplain, James, to do the service. Or I'll go along and just to witness the small sprinkling of the ashes, which is in our garden. It's an old bit of rugby park. So it has a lovely Bible verse there, and it's absolutely beautiful. And what I mean, the stories I get for that the last year and a half is 2 years, unbelievable. I feel as if I know every person that's on the wall, and I don't know them. I don't know them. But through talking to families of them, because I take to do it for the club, I feel as if I know these people. You know, and we get people visiting. Well, we get people that's visit every day. People visiting on a Saturday. It's open for anybody to visit. What we've found that this year, some of those families are actually coming to our remembrance service in November now. And that's when we honour the war dead. Then we were club chaplain James and our supporters associations, our trust, our directors, everybody. It's building year on year. And it just started off, to see if it's the start with. So, and I explained to you, we're community arm for education. Again, and we'll link up with the council. They're coming in, they're doing history lessons about it. So it's incredible what we're doing with that, what we're doing with the garden, and how what it's starting to mean to people here. Mm-hmm. It means a lot to them, and it's that's down to us and the council and the various people that we got the funding from, you know. But no, so you win the Scottish Cup. You're fortunate, very very fortunate position. That you win the Scottish Cup, and there's not a day goodbye. You're thankful for that, but your life goes on. Although you're still with the same club, and hope it's forever like that. You're still there. Because your football career's finished doesn't mean to say that you can't achieve other things at the club. You know, only it's different. You know, you're not out there on the park trying to achieve things. Yeah. You're trying to work for what's best for the club and what's best for the supporters now that you're not playing, but it's taking you down another avenue, another line.
I think that wonderful expression of humanity from you there Ray, is maybe testament of why you're so revered at this club, why you're the captain. But there's only one criticism that I've got for you during this entire period. You teased us with John Lambie, but you didn't give us a story.
John Lambie's outside. I don't think we could go into, but he was. I couldn't say in this podcast the stories about John Lambie. Ian, I loved him. I don't think this is the time.
Well, on that bombshell, what you've learned is that I now have to go away and research whether there's a street in Scottish football that's got more cup winning medals than Ray's. Also, the bombshell that there are children that have been baptised with the Scottish Cup potentially in 1997 in the after-match ceremonies. I've been your host, Ian Stephen. Tune in again next week for an episode of a podcast. You can find us at www.csi.com. Ray, thank you very much for your time.
Thanks for asking me.